It hit with the force of 10,000 nuclear weapons. A trillion tons of dirt and rock hurtled into the atmosphere, creating a suffocating blanket of dust the sun was powerless to penetrate for 1,000 years. It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Action Movie Rewind is back for the first episode in 2021. On the show, we do a deep dive into one of the blockbuster classics of the 90s, Armageddon. First, we're going to talk about the Putrid Timberwolves, and we'll also wrap with Royce later on the show. And a shout out to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated is back with us for 2021, and they are bringing even more tools to the table for business owners. How helpful would it be for you to have employee training at your fingertips? Industry resources that can help your business reach another level of success. Well, that's why Federated Mutual Insurance Company recently launched MyShield, the online client destination for risk management resources. We're talking about resources like safety training and videos, customizable risk management plans, sample risk management policies and checklists, workplace posters, employee handbook builders, and much, much more. Frontline protection and peace of mind, that's what Federated and MyShield offer up if you're a business owner. Go to federatedinsurance.com to find out more or download the MyShield app. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Join more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
These guys are playing hard. I mean, maybe it's not every possession. Maybe it doesn't look like it every possession, you know, with some of our defensive mistakes. But I absolutely don't feel that anybody is not giving effort out there. It's hard if you don't believe in it. And I believe in it. Gerson believes in it. So that's why, you know, you focus on, and hey, I get it. Losses, you know, when they do stack up, it hurts. It hurts. We're all competitors here.
Listen, you negative Nancys are going to focus on the fact that the Timberwolves were down by 30-plus points in the third quarter last night against the Portland Trailblazers.
I subjected myself to that.
Hey, they were up by four, like, 4 minutes in.
I subjected myself to that entire game, and I don't know exactly why.
That's fine. And you can be negative. I'm focusing on the positive and also focusing on being right, because our mutual friend Jace Frederick from the Pioneer Press tweeted out last night during that game, Ed Davis is the Wolves' best screener right now, and it's not remotely close. I'm telling you, the magic straw that stirs the drink, Ed Davis setting perfect screens up and down. These guys need to come off those screens better. Make some more shots. Ed Davis is a legendary screener.
Just because I sent you a text halfway through the game last night that said Ed Davis stinks doesn't mean that we have to talk about his ability to screen. Yeah, let me just say this again. I understand losses because, you know, teams, especially teams that aren't great and don't have their star player, lose games. But when you are trailing by 31 points in the third quarter and Portland removes all of their starters and you make a run and poor Dave Benz has to talk about, hey, you know, the Timberwolves are making a run here and they're doing it against the junior varsity of the Portland Trailblazers, that is somewhat disturbing. What is it about basketball teams in this town of late that when they lose, i.e. the Gophers on the road, right? Like, I get it. Lose by five. Stuff happens. It's life. But your trail, like, you get dusted by the Lakers. I sort of get that one, right? The Clippers, okay, that's, you know, I get the loss, but I don't get the fact. And then you lose back-to-back games to Denver and talk about, hey, you know, we lost, but it's closer. I mean, it's looking good. And you go to Portland and get absolutely drilled.
I'm going to go on a limb here. And, you know, D'Angelo Russell last week was talking about how, listen, it's before you can win. And by the way, this is D'Angelo Russell. This is a guy who has a ton of experience winning at the highest level of the NBA so far. D'Angelo Russell said, before you have to worry about winning and before you can, you know, go down that path, you got to learn how to lose the right way. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say last night was not exactly the manuscript for how to lose properly in the NBA.
And what he said and what you just said, gave me an idea last night as I rued my decision to keep Xfinity and Fox Sports North, okay? Here's my idea.
I was $300 cable bill.
I was thrilled last night.
Why don't you shut up,
Declan? Sinclair pulled FSN off of YouTube
TV.
You
should write everyone a note saying, thank you for disabling my ability to watch this crap. Okay. What the Wolves need to do is petition the National Basketball Association immediately to change the columns from W and L to W, G, L, B, L. Good loss, bad loss, okay? Because if we look at it in that light, those Denver games, there's a couple GLs.
A couple good losses.
We feel good about those losses. Lakers, Clippers, Blazers, they're BLs. Bad losses. We need to have a third. We need to have three categories.
Well, hockey already has that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm a hockey guy. Dex is too.
I love you.
I'm bringing new ideas.
You lost the game, but it was tied pretty late. So
here's
you're going to get a point.
Why not?
Everybody gets one.
That's what we need here. Oh my God.
I would say, all right. I'm trying to see if there's any silver lining last night because I was ducking in and out of some of the highlight clips. And Anthony Edwards had a posterizing dunk last night. So that was fun to watch. And Ricky Rubio had fun playing with the backups. In fact, for a while there.
I had a question about him for you.
You know, he had double-digit assists last night. And for a while there, he was orchestrating a comeback that shaved the lead from like 30 down to like 16. So a couple of silver linings last night.
I got a question for you. Serious question. And it's disturbing. But I might be overreacting shockingly a bit. Rubio, what is your opinion when you watch him play?
He looks a lot older than the last time I watched him play in a Timberwolves uniform.
And
he's not that old.
That's what I'm thinking, too. But
he's never been the fastest guy. But
am I missing something, though, that they're doing that is slowing him? I mean, he literally looks like an old man.
Yeah. He's never been like speed around Russell Westbrook energy guy, right? He's never been above the rim guy. So I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, he also has a style that's a little bit more silky smooth and slow things down. So is he doing it on purpose to just try?
That's
and
what I'm asking
people
you.
To
if,
slow
if
down.
If you think there is something behind this that goes beyond the fact that he just looks old.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably need to see a little bit more. I mean.
Good luck.
He's but like he wasn't brought
Come
in
over to my house.
He wasn't brought in to like be the guy on the court that
no, I know.
Elevates you to the NBA finals. He's more of like leader behind the scenes guy that's going to play 20 minutes or so.
I know.
And I think what I would be most highly concerned about here is yes, they're playing without Karl Anthony Towns. They were 2-0 with Karl Anthony Towns and like your product is centered around Karl Anthony Towns.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't look this bad without him. Like he's not a 30-point difference player in the third quarter last night. So also like the fact that he's now out for chunks again with a wrist injury. I mean, there's questions about his durability long term. I would just say that as exciting as the first two games were, and wow, like this team can score some points. They're actually pretty engaged on defense. Not perfect, but Karl Anthony Towns looks great.
Yep.
You're just waiting for him to come back at this point because. They are lost without him. And in fairness, you got a bunch of new players. You're installing new things.
But you can play defense.
Well, but what I'm saying is like a lot of the guys that they brought in, especially like Anthony Edwards, these guys have just never played defense in the NBA before, and it's going to take you a long time to figure it out. So I'm trying to decide between how much can I tolerate from a growing pains, chemistry, building, like you're putting together this house.
Yes.
How much can I continue to watch them build this house and have the ladder fall on their head versus what should the house look like if Karl Anthony Towns is in it versus what this thing needs to look like for them to actually be relevant next year or the year after that? So it's way too early to get
right now
judgy after eight games, but it looks pretty bad.
But right now, I think that we can all tolerate GLs. But BLs, we can't. The bad losses, we can't. That's the thing. You can't lose by 30 points. Like, you just can't.
Well, they didn't. They only lost by 18. And, so, I don't know what you're
talking
about.
Yeah, exactly. But if you look like you are engaged, I do have serious reservations about whether Ryan can do this from a human coaching standpoint of what you need to do with players. So, like, I think he's got the schemes down, And I think he's probably a really solid basketball guy. But it seems like he is the player's buddy and he's always defending him. And I get that from a media perspective, Phil. But just from a perspective of, do you have the ability to get them to take that next step? Because, I mean, this is a league full of people with egos and a lot of pride. And I think that there's a person between Ryan and Tibbs.
Well, there's a reason why most of the successful coaches in the NBA aren't in their mid-30s. Like,
right.
It's really hard, even with a put-together, competent veteran roster, to get what you need out of a team. He's just like, he's in the deep end, man. Mm-hmm. He is in the deep end. I've said it before. I think he is a brilliant basketball mind. I think he is going to be a head coach long term. But I also think this is a lot of water to take on when you're young and you've got all these players that you're trying to mold together for the first time. The thing that I am so Ryan Saunders definitely has a lot to prove as a coach. The thing that I am the most red flaggy about, and even though he's been putting up some good numbers, like he was 9 of 16 last night, 26 points, he had some assists. Like D'Angelo Russell is having some good games in the box score offensively.
Yeah.
But you're paying him max money in a salary cap league, and Karl Anthony Towns is in this bucket too. Like you're paying him max money to carry the team. Like he's not just a passenger. D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns have to carry this team. And so when LeBron James goes out for the Lakers, they don't just lose by 30. Now, part of it's because they've got better, you know, role players and a better system and better defensive players, et cetera. But like their other max player is good enough to still win you games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Like in the NBA, if you get into the habit, and they did this with Wiggins, where, well, we're going to give a guy a max contract or we're going to trade for a guy with a max contract. Well, you got to be sure that guy can carry you. And people are going to say, what do you mean? He scored 26 points. Like it's the other guy's fault. And yes, the other guys, the fact that Ed Davis is starting for you and like is you can literally just leave him alone offensively and you don't have to worry about anything. And the fact that Jake Lehman started the first handful of games and didn't take a shot for like the first three games.
Because when he did, it was awful.
Right. There are role player issues for sure. And this roster is nowhere near perfect. But long term, you're going to need more defensively and offensively from the guy that you are giving max money to next to Karl Anthony Towns. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and when Kat is out, which has been, I think, all but three games that D'Lo has played for the Wolves, when Kat is out, D'Lo does not consistently look like a guy who thinks he is taking on the assignment that you're talking about. There are times when he does. But if you're, like, watching the Wolves play and it's D'Angelo and no Kat, it does not look like for the entire game that he is prepared to take on that role. And he
especially
gets,
defensively,
no,
he's a net.
He also offensively, I think at times gets frustrated. And so he basically says, screw it. I'll just try and do this by myself, which can be the goal sometimes, but it can't be the goal all of the time. But I do think the one thing to keep in mind is that Ryan Saunders and a judgment of this team is going nowhere until Kat plays a substantial amount of games with D'Lo and we see a sample size that at least can be judged accurately. And right now, we don't.
Yep. So, all right, well, we'll keep an eye on them. And for now, I'm going to keep watching other things.
It's your club. It's your Wolves club. You should be. Yeah.
I was excited to watch every minute of the Wolves, and now I'm like,
it's not legal, but you found a way to watch.
Last night, I literally so Armageddon was on my list of things because we have Action Movie Rewind today.
I hope
it's like a 9-hour movie.
I hope you reserve some time for that.
But I was kind of excited. I was like, I'm going to watch part of Armageddon, and then I'm going to watch the Wolves, and then I'm going to watch the rest of Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the point. I think the Wolves, they were getting into the second quarter, and I was like, all right, I'm going to engage with the Wolves for the rest of the night. And then I was like, oh, they're already down by 20. And then Portland wound up putting up 47 points in the second quarter, and I was like, I'm going to keep watching.
How am I the guy on this show who was watching this blasted basketball team the most?
Hey, you upset Stella. I saw your tweet. You yelled at the TV.
Oh, okay. So we had a back-to-back possession, I believe, last night. I'm not joking. Jared Vanderbilt, who I actually like because he plays his ass off.
Yeah, he had a double-double last night.
And I think he stole a ball below the basket, and basically all he had to do was go up and dunk it, which is what he did.
Yeah.
The ball, I believe, hit the back of the rim and bounced off. So I remain calm because it was bad, but you know what? He tried hard. Okay. So then in like the next series, or I don't know when, the next trip down the floor, Jarrett Culver gets the ball. Same thing. Like all he has to do is go up, slam it. He goes up and tries to lay the ball in. It rolls off. Yeah. And that's the point where I started screaming at the TV and Stella got pissed off. I was like, Stella, how do you miss back-to-back? I mean, they're bunnies, basically, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, they miss a lot of layups.
How do you miss layups?
Here's one for you, all right? So I've got the Wolves.
How?
I've got the Wolves stat page, the shooting stats open right now. And the Wolves, now some of this is small sample size, but
you're blind. Field
goal percentage, point blank. So 0 to 3 feet. So you're literally just like layup range, right? Ed Davis, 31% from 0 to 3 feet on the season.
Yeah.
Malik Beasley, 53%. Like, all right, come on, dude. 53%. Ricky Rubio has always been pretty bad at the rim. He's like 50% from the rim. And they missed a couple last night, so. Anyways, all right, well, maybe the Wolves will get Karl-Anthony Towns back for the second half of the season, and we can actually see what this team is supposed to look like. Him and D'Lo have played 3 games together.
Yeah.
Ever.
One last.
3 games together.
One before the stoppage, and then 2 this year. It was.
It's the size of Texas, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
Dan, we didn't see this thing coming.
Well, our object collision budget's $1 million. That allows us to track about 3% of the sky.
And begging your pardon, sir, but it's a big-ass sky.
And the ones this morning?
Those are nothing. They're the size of basketballs
and Volkswagens, things like that.
Is this going to hit us?
We're efforting that as we speak, sir.
What kind of damage are we?
Damage? Total, sir. It's what we call a global killer. The end of mankind. Doesn't matter where it hits. Nothing would survive, not even bacteria.
My God.
Bury the lead much?
Yeah.
My God. Oh, and by the way, it's a global killer.
Yeah.
What kind of damage are we talking? Oh.
The whole world.
Everything.
Yeah.
It's Billy Did Bob. I forget to mention that off
Love
the top?
Billy Bob.
Love them.
Action Movie Rewind 90s. In just a second. But you know what? Our friends at Corona, so we've really enjoyed our partnership with Corona and Corona Hard Seltzer all throughout the football season. They have kept us hydrated. They have helped us cope. And they're also helping you with this ultimate tailgate experience through the football playoffs. Get ready for this, okay? Sweepstakes will award 6 winners with a Corona Game Day prize pack valued at over $3,500, including a 70-inch TV, wireless surround system, football furniture, a football grill. Actually, it's a Corona grill. It's not shaped like a football, but it's a grill.
I'm looking awesome. At it right now. It looks great. Yeah, oh, it's huge. Awesome.
Yep. And then you got the beanbag set, all kinds of cool things. The football furniture is really, if I could just pick one thing here, I've already got a couple TVs. Like, give me the football furniture.
Oh, it's a helmet, too. Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's awesome.
It's great. So details, rules, and entry can be found at gamedaywithcorona.com. If you want to enter gamedaywithcorona.com, you must be 21 or over and live within a 40-mile radius of Minneapolis. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes subject to change. Enter by January 18, 2021. We need like a sped up version of me reading the fine print here. Corona beers imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois. Relax responsibly.
I know you have to go. We can all just sit here on Earth, wait for this big rock to crash into it, kill everything and everybody we know. The United States government just asked us to save the world. Anybody want to say no?
20 years. They haven't turned you down once. I'm about to start now. I'm there.
Guess I can't let you go up there alone.
I'm with you.
I mean, this is historic. Guys, this is like deep blue hero stuff. Of course I'm in.
While I don't share his enthusiasm, you know me. Beam me up, Scotty.
You all right, Max?
I don't...
Whatever you think.
What about you?
I'm in.
All right, then. We go.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Action Movie Reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
Miss Tamper, Colonel Willie Sharp, United States Air Force, ma'am. Requesting permission to shake the hand of the daughter of the bravest man I've ever met.
Oh, my God!
You're my hero!
Oh, baby. I want to have babies.
Welcome back, that boy.
Harry wanted you to have this.
You did, huh?
That actually happened to Judd after he walked out of the Week 17 game of the 2010 Viking season. Somebody greeted him and said, boy, after covering that season, I just want to shake the hand of the bravest man I've ever met.
Permission to shake the hand of the dumbest person I've ever run across.
So the movie is Action Movie Rewind. It's our first episode of 2021. A bunch of people have asked in recent weeks, I'm just discovering this for the first time. Where can I find the other episodes? Well, for now, you just have to go back and find the Friday edition of Mackie and Judd podcast. Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com. The PodMN app is another great place. So just go find those. At some point, we might catalog them in a separate feed, but that takes a lot of time and work, and Declan's busy. We're busy. So we'll do that at some point.
I'm busy.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a ridiculous project.
I like how you backed off that.
Yeah.
So we'll do that at some point.
All right.
But today's deep dive is one of the 90s blockbuster classics, one of the most expensive movies ever made, Armageddon, 1998. Here are the details, boys. When an asteroid threatens to collide with Earth, NASA honcho Dan Truman, played by Billy Bob Thornton, magnificently, I might add,
Billy Bob,
determines the only way to stop the asteroid is to drill into its surface and detonate a nuclear bomb. This leads him to renowned driller Harry Stamper, played by Bruce Willis, who agrees to helm the dangerous space mission, provided he can bring along his own hotshot crew. Among them is the cocksure AJ, played by Ben Affleck in his new teeth, which we'll get to, who Harry thinks isn't good enough for his daughter, Liv Tyler, until the mission proves otherwise. It's saving the world. It's building lasting, loving relationships. It's mending fences. It's 38% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Criminally low.
Here's the critic.
It won Bruce a Razzie.
For worst performance?
For worst performance. They had multiple nominations.
Here's the critic's consensus from Rotten Tomatoes. Lovely to look at, but about as intelligent as the asteroid that serves as the movie's antagonist, Armageddon slickly sums up the cinematic legacies of producer Jerry Bruckheimer and director Michael Bay. $140 million budget, which may have been, can't remember, we had that list before. At the time, it was like one of, if not the most expensive movies of all time.
Yep.
Turned into $554 million worldwide at the box office. So it was a blockbuster box office hit. Liv Tyler, Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, Billy Bob Thornton, Will Patton, a year before Remember the Titans, Steve Buscemi, Michael Clark Duncan, Owen Wilson, and others. Directed and produced, as mentioned, by Michael Bay and Jerry Bruckheimer, kings of the big-budget action movies during this era and even in the 80s with Bruckheimer. Previous to this, in the couple years prior, they had both collaborated on The Rock and Bad Boys. And so they were feeling themselves.
Yeah. Well, they had done a good job.
Yeah, this was a heat check movie for them. Let's get $140 million.
They got their big check.
Let's make it as long as Gone with the Wind.
Oh, my God.
We'll start with Judd Zulgad. What was your key takeaway from Armageddon?
Oh, boy.
Sorry for going 30 minutes over your two-hour limit.
30 minutes over, and it was completely unnecessary.
Oh, come on.
Completely unnecessary.
What do you mean?
So my takeaway was this. This is the danger of having a budget that continually, I believe, gets added to as the film goes on. Hey, oh, here's $100 million. Oh, you want $30 million? That's fine. With huge names. Because it had huge names. And a desire to continue to write and put in special effects throughout the entire film. You could hear the conversations internally, right? Yeah, what should we do here? You know what? Let's write in a scene where we give the guys a night off and do more backstory that we really don't need. But yeah, yeah. Wait.
One more casino scene.
Hold on a second here. That's not enough. You're right. Let's write in a scene where they're about to leave and Ben Affleck sings to Liv Tyler leaving on a jet plane and everybody joins in. It'll be great. It's great. Yeah, you know what? Let's write that in.
That was a great scene. It showed how emotionally connected two characters were.
Hold on a second. Okay, so to start the film, we killed the guys in space because the asteroid hit them. We then blew up a large portion of New York. That's not enough. Let's blow up Shanghai and Paris, too, and show it in 1998 special effects, which back then was awesome and now is not as great. This is the danger because Bruckheimer, for the most part, is great. Like, his films are great. But this is the danger of him being so big that they just continue to add and add and add. And that's how you get to 2.5 hours of Armageddon, which, by the way, cannot hold, in my opinion, a candle to Independence Day.
This,
which is great.
Yeah, they're actually kind of similar in that they're like you're fending off, in the case of Independence Day, aliens, but in this case, like an asteroid, you're fending off invaders from space. One's an inanimate object, the other are aliens. I think my main takeaway is that this movie just puts a stamp on everything excess from the 90s. Like,
yes.
It was just all the possible bells and whistles and tricks and whatever tools you had at your disposal as a movie maker in 1998. It was like, yes, let's budget to use all of them.
And
every last shred of it.
Yeah.
It's and Bruckheimer movies are famous for having just quick cuts all the time. Like, if you go back and watch it through that lens, you'll notice that almost every single shot is like 3 seconds or less, or even like 1 or 2 seconds. It's just boom, 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 boom. Even if it's just like back and forth and different angles. And so you get done with this after 2.5 hours and you literally need to like lay down because it's just stimulation overload. And I got a million other thoughts that I want to save for some of the other categories. So, Declan, what was your main takeaway from this movie?
I mean, amazing cast. Honestly, a great cast. Like, an all-star cast. I was really excited about that. I think that's what made me very interested in the movie. It means Buscemi. I love Steve Buscemi.
He plays the same character in every movie.
Every film.
But he's marvelous.
Every film.
He has mastered.
He kills it every time.
It's like a 25-year career just playing the same weirdo in every single movie, right?
Yeah.
Smart, weird, sexual deviant. That's what he is.
That is what he is.
Criminal.
Yep.
But I think it hits. I know it's long, but it hits on everything we're looking for. It's got over the top special effects, ridiculous plot line, like one of the most absurd plot lines I have ever heard. Hey, an asteroid,
a little bit of a dodgy premise.
An asteroid's coming to Earth that's the size of Texas, going to wipe out civilization like the dinosaurs did. What do we do? Oh, my instant thought: deep oil driggers. Deep oil diggers. We're going to get them.
Actually, their first thought was, what if we put like a net up in space and caught the asteroid? Yeah.
Which probably makes more sense.
It makes that
the net probably makes more sense.
Build
than
a wall.
The deep oil diggers trying to go in and dig through it.
But it has ridiculous over the special effects that are over the top. I cried. I totally cried at the end.
What?
I totally
you
cried.
Did?
I cried.
Oh my God.
Let's see if we can get Declan to cry again here.
Miss Tamper, Colonel Willie Sharp, United States Air Force, man. Requesting permission to shake the hand of the daughter of the bravest man I've ever met.
I just got chills. I just got chills.
By the way,
I cried at the father at Liv Tyler Bruce Willis goodbye scene. I cried at that scene.
Yeah, when he gets on at NASA and is allowed to give a long dissertation. I'm not coming home.
Did you know that production notes, so Bruce Willis was actually, in the filming of that scene, was looking down at pictures of his own daughter so that he could squeeze out some actual tears.
Oh, no. Oh, wow, no. That's cool. Yeah. It's good to know. But yeah, I cried. I enjoyed this movie is what I will say. I'll say my ranking, but I enjoyed it. I know it's long, but I enjoyed it.
All right, Joe, what was your favorite thing about Armageddon?
Seeing which megastars they were going to kill.
Almost all of them.
So for a second, I bought into the fact Affleck might be dead, because there were like three times where he had to be dead. There were like at least three times where he suffered what had to be considered a catastrophic injury. But I actually enjoyed following along and seeing which stars they decided, okay, we got to kill. And I don't count Bruce at the end because he goes out as the hero of the film, obviously.
It's
at the very end, and then, you know, but I was curious who got to come back to Earth, who didn't. So my actual favorite part was like a bingo card tracking who was going to live and who was going to die. That was my favorite part.
Owen Wilson, the minute you saw him on camera, you're like, that guy's totally dying first, right? 100%.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, my favorite thing about this movie is what Declan brought up. It's the dodgy premise.
Yeah.
It's so, like, it's so far and beyond and ridiculous. It just go back to speed for a second, because you guys took issue with my issue with speed.
Yep.
That, like, you got to keep the bus over 50 miles an hour, 55 or whatever
don't
it was.
You
it was
like, don't you rip on speed again.
And it was like, they thought it was realistic that you could drive a bus that fast, like off exits and stuff. And they were trying to make it realistic. This was just like they blew past the realistic stop sign shamelessly. And I've got a quote here I found off of some website where so I'll just read this to you guys. Even Ben Affleck didn't think the storyline was actually believable.
I found this.
And during the DVD commentary, he revealed what happened when he asked director Michael Bay a particular question about the plot. Quote, I asked Michael, why is it easier to train oil drillers to become astronauts than it was to train astronauts to become oil drillers, Affleck said. And he told me to shut the bleep up. And that was the end of that talk.
That was it.
Ben Affleck asking then, questions, wants answers. Ben Affleck.
So they have 18 days until the asteroid hits Earth and destroys all life forms, including bacteria, right? And their only plan, as Declan said off the top, is to drill a hole in it on the fly and jam a nuclear bomb onto the inside of this 6-mile radius asteroid. And they're 100% sure that that's going to work if they can do it. But they're also 100% sure that if you just shoot nuclear bombs at or missiles at the asteroid, that that will for sure not work and it will still kill everybody.
It'll hit Earth.
How can they be so sure about either one of those things?
Shut the bleep up.
What are you talking about?
And then.
I'm with Michael Bay on this. Don't question this.
So then they're like 95% of the way. Like they've trained these oil drillers to be astronauts and they've sent them up into space and they've landed on the asteroid and they've started drilling. They've actually started drilling. They're like 150 feet in. And the president from however many, you know, miles away pulls the plug on the mission.
Yeah.
Pulls the plug on the mission. Like, wait a second. We just trained oil drillers to be astronauts, sent them onto the face of an asteroid with a drill bit, and they're like 25% of the way done. And the president's like, nope.
We're done.
Pull everything out.
And you know what? A major flaw, in my opinion, in the casting and execution of this film was the lack of the president really being in the film.
Yeah, we needed Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman, as silly as the fact that he actually then flies a mission and like blows up the aliens in Independence Day. Bill Pullman's great in that film, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you needed the president to be not the forefront of this film, but to be involved.
But this was like a cowardly president, right?
Yeah.
It was like an incompetent president.
But I need a president.
Yeah. I actually like General Kimsey more than I like the president. Keith David.
Yeah.
I liked him way more. He was
but
awesome.
But I want the president like to have a role.
To what extent after watching this, do you guys fear a massive Earth-ending meteor colliding with Earth?
I wrote down, would I rather die from a natural disaster like this or from COVID? I literally wrote that down in my notes. Like, would I rather be killed by like a global pandemic or from a asteroid? And I honestly might take the asteroid.
It's asteroid if you don't know.
Yeah.
I would rather just like have an asteroid hit us and we all die.
That's another thing that we have to talk about.
But if you tell me with like 2 weeks advance notice, there's going to be an asteroid, you can't just like go to Canada. Everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'd probably still choose that because I don't want to have like lung problems for 2 weeks and then die.
Sure.
But didn't the notes on this say that the biggest asteroid that could actually hit Earth is like 3 miles or four? It's like way smaller than the state of Texas.
Okay.
So I think that the fact was that they also completely made up what the size of an asteroid could possibly be.
Well, according to stardate.org, the chances of something like this, even on a smaller scale, happening in our lifetimes. So I'm going to read you this number.
Okay.
My first thought was like, okay, that's like, there's definitely not a good chance of it happening, but I was kind of hoping the number would be even bigger. It's 1 in 10,000. There's a 1 in 10,000 chance
something hitting Earth.
That in our lifetimes, a big asteroid would hit Earth. And like 1 in 10,000, you're probably fine, right? But it's also like
that's
it's like half of an arena.
Yeah. 10,000 to 1.
I don't buy that.
It says over thousands or millions of years, major impacts become pretty likely. Ancient craters on Earth's surface prove that large objects have hit Earth in the past, and there's no reason to think that this won't continue at some point into the future. Now, there was a story at some point that NASA used this movie in their training process, not to show like, all right, here's how you become an astronaut, but to show they would show the video to see if the aspiring astronauts could pick out the 160 plus scientific flaws in the movie. But then there was another conflicting report in my Wikipedia research that said that that didn't actually happen, but it would be hilarious if it did.
Can you imagine forcing astronauts in training to sit down for 2.5 hours and watch this thing trying to pick out the 300 flaws?
Oh, that's amazing. Declan, what was your favorite part of this movie?
To the surprise of no one, Liv Tyler. I love Liv Tyler.
She had a run there, man. She had a run.
She's only 21, I think, in this movie. I did the math. There's a scene, and at first I wanted to jump out of my two-story balcony window when I was first watching this, and then I had an epiphany. So it's the scene where right before they're doing the launch and her and Affleck are having like a little picnic, and it's like the post-pillow talk thing, and like there's an animal cracker involved, and Affleck's like pretending to be an animal cracker on her body. And at first I'm like, man, this is some painful, horrible acting.
That's your dream now.
Hold on. I'll get there. And at first I was very upset and confused by it. And I was like, this is some awful acting. And then I had an epiphany of, I would give my life savings to be that animal cracker. So I completely understood.
Well, you're right about both things, Dex.
Yeah.
Like it was, in fact, we should discuss the career arc of one Benjamin Affleck, because this was at the point where that man could not act his way out of a paper bag.
But he's become, I think, a
he's
great
become
actor.
Good. He's become good. But Good Will Hunting, which he wrote with Damon, in which Damon is just phenomenal. Affleck's good because he plays this dumb friend. So he's like fine.
That was the year before this came out.
And it's a great film.
It launched him into this movie.
And Damon is outstanding. Like, he's great. And I believe the two of those guys wrote the film together, and so they both deserve credit. And then he did, what's the one that he did, I think, where they're the devil as well with Damon? He did small projects that were actually good films that I think were successful. But as far as big budget actual acting, he could not act. My contention about Ben Affleck was the first film that I saw him and said, whoa, something's changed, was The Town. I think in The Town he's brilliant.
Is a great movie.
I think he's really good. But this was at the point where he took roles, and my God, was he bad.
I'm just going through his IMDb here. I'm going to pick out, I haven't heard of all these movies. At one point, he was doing like 4 or 5 movies a year.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard of all these, but he went Good Will Hunting, Shakespeare in Love, Armageddon. There's a few I've never heard. Dogma, and there's a couple other
ones. Dogma's great. That's the film that I'm talking about with Matt Damon.
Boiler Room
is good, but not because of Ben Affleck.
Pearl Harbor's awful. I'm sorry.
Pearl Harbor 2001.
Never saw
has
it.
Has a very similar feel to this movie.
It does. It's pretty much
where
the
it's
same
like,
thing.
You know, you're kind of, you're although, like, it's based on a true story because it's based on the Pearl Harbor attacks.
Right.
But Pearl Harbor.
At least it's plausible.
Actually, like, I went on a high school date with a girl to see Pearl Harbor. Not the best choice.
How long is Pearl Harbor?
It's got to be over 2 hours.
Oh, it's like 3. It's 3 hours, 3 minutes. Because I remember.
Are you serious?
Yes, I remember. This was.
What
one
were
of
you thinking, Phil?
This was one of the, like the first films like on DVDs where they sort of split it up into two discs because it was in the early parts of the DVDs.
It's
3 hours, 3 minutes.
When's the last time we don't get 3 hour movies anymore?
No.
I feel like
Avenger. I think one of the Marvel movies was like one of the last ones.
Oh. Changing Lanes. Geely was panned widely in 2003.
Jennifer
Lopez.
Daredevil.
Jersey Girl.
Daredevil.
All right, then he starts to pick it up a little bit here. Well, Smoke and Aces in 06, Gone Baby Gone. But you're right, 2010, The Town.
The Town.
I think that's when the tone changed with him.
Yeah.
Really good movie.
And then he was in another great movie 2 years later, Argo, if you guys
saw
that.
And he's really good in that, yes.
Gone Girl in 2014 is incredible.
Yes.
And then there's a few other
ones. I think it changed.
Yeah.
I don't know if he got lessons.
He wasn't a good Batman. I'll tell you that much. He was not a good Batman. He was the Batman after Bale.
But. So I thought his biggest problem in a lot of the films like this was the fact that he thought he had to act a lot. like he was acting.
Well, he wasn't Ben Affleck yet. Now he can just kind of be Ben Affleck,
yes,
right?
Yeah, but yeah. But like if he was in big budget films back then, you know, it was lines like, I love you. It's yeah, like
he
Ben.
He's like goofy guy.
Yeah.
My favorite Liv Tyler movie is a movie called The Strangers from 2008.
Oh, yeah.
It's a horror movie.
It's terrifying.
That Thing You Do is that easily thing is my favorite. I love her in that.
She's also in Lord of the Rings.
And she has great lines in that.
Yep.
Great lines. I only watch her movies for the great lines.
Oh, that Thing You Do is probably my favorite Tom Hanks venture.
Yeah, it's a great one.
It is really? Oh, it's a great,
it's really a great movie.
It's
like,
so well done.
Wow. I feel like that's your favorite Tom Hanks venture is hot take.
I think it is my I think it is my favorite.
He's a supplemental character. He's kind of like a supplemental.
No,
but he like directed and
that's his film.
Yeah,
that's totally his film.
Right.
Oh man. Police are circling, man. Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump is way too long. Forrest Gump is overrated. It is Field of Dreams 2
to
me.
If it's over 120 minutes, Zolgad is not
interested. Honest to God, Forrest Gump, cut some of the scenes out.
Tom Hanks once did a two-hour movie with a volleyball, okay?
Like, I know, and you know what? Not my favorite Tom Hanks venture. That Thing You Do is the perfect film about a band. It's great. I love it. Tom Hanks's films that he won Oscars for are all too long, and I could have cut them down myself.
If Tom Hanks would have been in Armageddon, what role would he have played?
Probably Billy Bob or Bruce Willis.
Yeah, yeah, just like a more thoughtful
Bob. I think Billy Bob.
Yeah.
A more thoughtful version of Billy Bob.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
In fact, the one person who was missing from this film that actually shocked me, because at that time it would have fit in perfect, Kevin Costner.
I thought you were going to say Will Smith.
Well, that too. But Kevin Costner, to me, would have fit in somewhere in this film perfectly.
What was your least favorite part of Armageddon?
Okay. All right. Hold on a second. I've got two pages.
How much
of notes.
Time do we have left?
I got two pages. Notes. This is going to go 2 hours and 33 minutes, just like you forced me to watch this film. Okay. My least favorite part is this. And I'll just read off my script. So let me get this straight. At the start of the film, they kill the astronauts in space, which is fine. But then they also have the asteroid fragmenting and breaking up, and they blow up a good portion of New York, Manhattan, right?
Which was very, very creepy
to see. The World Trade Center scene is creepy, okay?
It is freaky.
And yet, well into the film, well into it, I think until Paris gets hit, the impending doom of the situation remains, as NASA says, classified. So let me get this one straight. New York is basically blown to smithereens, all right? And yet we get well into the film, and it's like people don't know yet. They don't know. Wouldn't you figure out when the evening news comes on and Manhattan's in tatters?
Something's
that
happening.
Something might have happened?
Yeah.
Like if you live in Chicago, wouldn't you be like, oh, you know what? No problem. It's just New York.
It is kind of hilarious, yeah. And then you see these like people celebrating throughout the cities and stuff. It's like, I don't know. I feel like the vibe wouldn't be quite as joyous during these 3 weeks. But
the end where they get back without basically half the crew, and they're like, let me shake the hand of the bravest guy I knew who just got blown to smithereens by a nuclear.
So my least, I'm gonna piggyback off you, because my least favorite part is actually the irresponsible media coverage of what's happening. Did you catch the part? Where so at one point during the movie, Billy Bob said, there are 9 satellites in the world that could see what is about to happen, and we own 8.
Yep.
And so I don't know what the 9th one was, if it was Russian or something, but or North Korean or whatever. But like his thought was, we're going to try and keep this quiet as long as possible, but at some point news is going to leak out that like there's a huge asteroid and it's going to kill everybody. And so When the end is in question, we get this shot of like all the major cities, and we get a radio news guy or a TV news guy. And I wrote down the quote of the TV news guy here. Now, Judd Zolgad and I both went to journalism school. Did you go to journalism school at St. Cloud?
Yeah, they have journalism school.
So we are all highly professional trained journalists here in this room, okay?
Yep.
I'm going to read you the transcript. Now, mind you, this is a world-ending event that you are reporting on here, okay? And this is verbatim what the, I would assume, national radio update guy is telling the world. Quote, We're getting sketchy information that the mission has suffered a massive failure. What we're trying to do right now is confirm that and figure out what that means. We're getting leaks from NASA officials that the drilling was unsuccessful. All right. This isn't the scoop with Doogie where he can just flood out like, listen, all right, I talked to a guy, but I'm going to float this anyways because it's, you know, it's not like world ending news if I'm wrong on this.
No, this is.
This is world ending. And this reporter is saying, we're getting sketchy getting sketchy information that the mission has suffered a massive failure.
Sounds
we're
like Fox News,
man. We're checking on it.
Fox News.
I guess.
And next up, Tucker Carlson tells you if the world's going to end or not. That's straight ahead.
So the irresponsible media is what bothered me the most. My least favorite part.
I can't believe
story.
You picked on the media. I just love the fact New York is obliterated and people are like, I don't know what's going on.
Who knows?
Perhaps it's not going to be a problem in Montana.
Is that hail? All right, Declan, your least favorite part of this movie.
How the fact when they do the slingshot around the moon, which I'm fine with. That part I'm okay with, even though it seems pretty much impossible. But all right, it's fine. It's space. I don't know anything about space. But when they finally land the two, like one plane lands pretty much unhinged, no problem on the asteroid. The other one completely misses the mark, wasn't even close. Everyone almost dies except for two. And I just thought it was ridiculous how one lands like completely fine and the other one, they all basically almost die. Four of the six die, I think, on the Independence one, whatever the
Wasn't
the
it all
was.
Of them died? Didn't all of them die?
No.
No, because Affleck and Duncan survived.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
Owen okay. Wilson died and the two pilots died.
That's right.
They got blown out the window.
Yeah, and they rode their little,
But they were fine.
Yeah, and then
but the rest of them were fine.
And then part two of the actor almost turning rogue, wanting to blow up, like, no, I have orders to blow up the nuke. He's going to do it. And then all of a sudden he just turns like, yeah, actually, let's stop it. Let's go.
You're totally right.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. He just like flip-flops like four times.
And then he's got the gun. I love the gun where, like, just in case something went really wrong,
right.
We're gonna have a gun in space.
Also, didn't they? So he's got the gun in space, but like after that interaction, and he stands down, and the nuclear bomb gets turned off. Bruce Willis clocks him upside the head with that wrench, right?
Yeah, but he's not knocked out.
And then like
he's
later
fine.
On, he's just like back with the crew.
He's fine. He's like, no problem at all.
It's all good.
So if you took a gun to space and shot a guy or tried to, would the physics work the same way that they work
I don't
on
think
Earth?
So.
Let me just Google, do guns work
well,
in space?
Even,
like, if I shot a gun on the moon, I got to think that the bullet's trajectory might be, and I'm no scientist, but I got to think that it might be altered.
And someone says to you, like, well, what are you doing there with a gun in space? You know, like, even like the goofiness of the
whole thing. Hey, Yosemite Sam, why do you have a gun in space?
Okay, so livescience.com, what would happen if you shot a gun in space?
Love it. Thank
Fires
you.
Can't burn in the oxygen-free vacuum of space, but gun. Now, this might be like there might be a difference between firing a gun as you're floating in space versus firing a gun in a spaceship that has some sort of like
right. But I think you would have had
control.
To take it out. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe
right.
someday no. we'll go to space and.
No, I have no interest.
No,
in going
I have no
space.
Interest.
I don't like space.
I have
really?
No interest.
Space.
Yeah.
Space
if I was in that room and Bruce was like, "Who's in?" Like, "Yeah, I'm out." Like, I'll just take the death. That's. I'm not going to space.
Oh yeah,
I don't
like,
do space.
Yeah.
So you're saying that if given, actually, this is another question.
Yeah.
Let's say you were an expert oil driller,
sure.
like just like
no.
these guys.
Yep. No, I'm
and
not
you were
bath,
told like, the world ends in 18 days, and this is our only plan, and you are the only people that can help us with this. You're saying you don't go.
I don't go.
Oh, hell no.
I'm out.
You guys let the world explode.
Yes.
I'm
Cowards.
An oil driller. I'm an oil driller.
Cowards.
Why are you? No, I'd say it's your job. You're NASA. You find, you go.
I've been called far worse. That's fine.
What types of things would you guys request? So there's, they have these lists of like, all right, we'll totally do this, but my guy needs some parking tickets to be wiped off of his record. This guy needs a couple of women to be made U.S. citizens.
Shocking.
Right?
Yeah,
like, what are the
shaming.
Things that you guys would want if before you said yes to this?
Nothing for me because I ain't going. I'm walking. I'm not even going to NASA to get to hear the pitch.
But you're gonna die either way.
Yeah, you know what? I'd rather die in my bed than die in space.
What's the difference? You're going
What's
to
the
die
difference?
Either way.
What's the difference? The difference is this. Accepting your fate or dying in some grisly fashion in outer space.
But controlling you have a chance to control your fate.
I got no shot. Okay. I've got no shot up there. They didn't either. The fact that Ben Affleck didn't die four times is,
I'd probably ask for like twin season tickets if I could hope.
Twin season tickets?
That's exactly
you
what
ain't
I
ever
want.
Gonna see a Twins game again, boy.
That's fine.
Well, no, that, I mean the idea is if you succeed, you're gonna want yeah. something, right?
Yeah.
All right, next question on our list here. What was the least believable thing about Armageddon?
Oh, Christ, you guys threw them all out.
No, there's a couple more.
Okay, go.
Right. 1 minute until a nuclear bomb goes off. Okay, you guys remember that part where the bomb turns back on, and there's like a minute 30 left, and Bruce Willis is sitting there giving inspirational speeches like, I will make 800 feet. I swear to God I will. And he's talking about his daughter, and they keep showing the clock, and Will Patton keeps giving updates. 1 minute. We will make 800 feet. I swear to God. 42 seconds. And they're just like having this argument about, like, I don't even think it was an argument. I think they had decided that they're going to go through with this. They're going to shut the nuclear bomb off from the local site.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruce Willis is going through this, like, emotional speech of some kind. And they know that, like, once it hits 30 seconds, we'll still totally have enough time to shut this nuclear bomb off very calmly and level-headedly with the world's existence on the line. So in a movie full of unbelievable things, I thought that was quite ridiculous.
So mine is that the second shuttle, which crashes, and all but two were dead, okay?
Yep.
So Affleck and his buddy who lived get in with, by the way, the most stereotypical Russian character I have ever seen in my life. He's got the accent. It's like he's drunk.
Welcome to the Russian space station.
He is nothing.
I'm saving your American asses.
So this is another one where they've got a budget and an unlimited amount of time, okay? And somebody said, you know what we need? We need some comic relief in space. Yeah, let's do a Russian space. Because landing, having to land or refuel was like the... It's like... Oh, okay, whatever. And then he is the most stereotypical drunk Russian boob of all time. But so it's Affleck's character, Russian, and the third guy. And they're in what? Like a space rover driller of some sort?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they've like landed in a different part of the asteroid and they like fly it.
Yeah.
And they like...
They jump over some sort of cliff.
Yeah. And they jump the cliff and they're in space, but then they land back on the asteroid and they somehow locate their long lost friends.
I mean, they had a GPS, didn't they?
Exactly. Again.
Google Maps.
Again. Not only should they all have been dead, but the fact that they just happened.
They had printed out MapQuest directions.
But the fact that they just happened to find their buddies and that the driller does not get ruined. It's preserved so that they can use that for drilling. They literally, by that point, did not care. They're like, it looks good. That's all we care about. That to me was the most unbelievable part.
Dex, what was your least believable part of this movie?
Yeah, just the fact that they came up really quickly that oil diggers are going to be the people to blow up this asteroid. Just like how quickly that was assumed. I just like it was 5 minutes into the film. We had the introduction of the dinosaurs, and here Manhattan gets destroyed, and then it's just like it. Honestly, it's instantaneous. Oil diggers. It was just like there wasn't any type of like. I know Judd doesn't like drawn out scenes. They could have spent 15 to 20 minutes or a quick little montage of figuring out some type of other people to do this. And instantaneously, they knew it was deep sea.
Like this should have been their fallback plan. They should have had like an amazing plan A, and then something bad happened to that. And it's like, oh, my God, we have to go to our plan B. It's these guys.
Then I would have got it.
Actually, I have another least favorite thing or least believable thing. So Aerosmith was the musical star of this movie and Liv Tyler, Steven Tyler's daughter, lead singer of Aerosmith. Mm. So would you believe Aerosmith, the Dream On came out in 1973, one of their most popular songs ever.
Yep.
So Aerosmith had been around for over 25 years. I think they might have even been Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by this point when you get to the late 90s.
Sure.
Don't Want to Miss a Thing was their only ever number one single in the United States.
Really?
That's insane.
Dream On... The reissue of Dream On in 1975 made it to 6. Now, this isn't the rock chart. This is the U.S. top 100 charts.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Angel in 1988 was 3rd. Love in an Elevator. Janie's Got a Gun were top 5.
Yeah, it's a good song, too.
What It Takes was top 10. And then I Don't Want to Miss a Thing was number 1.
Which, by the way, was not their best song. There's a lot of better Aerosmith songs than that one.
I agree with that. But it was the most mainstream song they ever did.
Quickly, of all the crew members, which one was the least likely to go up there in space? Of all the
guy that
guys?
The guy that dies drilling the first time.
The big guy? Oh. The big guy?
Yeah, he's sort of fat.
Yeah, Max, I think.
Yeah, and he died. That guy ain't going.
I feel like Michael Clark Duncan, because he showed some fear in the initial stages, too.
Yeah. I love how, too, Steve Buscemi was just a secret genius. Yeah, I went to MIT. You know, like he.
No, but he would go. Like, that's yeah. the type of guy
and
who he, wouldn't
and
care.
I love
He'd
how
go.
He knew that they overshot the landing by 7 miles without ever being to space.
Because I'm a genius.
That's why.
Yeah. Oh, when at the start, where they identify the drilling crew, and they go find Bruce on his boat thing that he is drilling on, and the government guy gets off the copter and says, "I need you to get on the copter."
It's chopper.
No questions asked. No questions asked. And this guy, who supposedly is like really, really a hard ass, right? He's like really defiant at times. He basically just says, "Yeah, I'll go."
It is kind of weird when
it's like,
the FBI
you're not
rolls
asking,
up.
It's top secret. Can't tell you right now.
I feel like there's got to be more of a discussion in that situation.
Yeah, I don't think that Bruce is going to just be like, oh, yeah, you know what? No problem. I will leave my, what I apparently think is like a really high-paying head of this company job to go in the choppa.
Well, I think when the U.S. government comes, I think you entertain it.
Well, you do.
I don't think you have a choice.
You do, but I don't think that you just, I don't think that you're just told, no questions asked. Get on the chopper. And
yeah, they would,
like,
they would
hey, no problem at all.
They would say, is there an office we can talk in before we get on the chopper?
Okay, no problem. Yep, let's go.
Production facts for you guys. Director Michael Bay wasn't thrilled by how Ben Affleck's teeth looked on camera.
Yeah.
So he decided to pay for the actor to get a new set of teeth. There's plenty of close-up teeth shots of Ben Affleck, and there's just pearly whites. Affleck had to spend 8 hours a day for a full week sitting in a dentist chair to get his new pearly whites at a cost of $20,000. And I assume that was part of the film budget. Also, in an interview with the Miami Herald, Michael Bay apparently apologized for Armageddon. The journalist alleged that Bay said, quote, "I'll apologize for Armageddon because we had to do the whole movie in 16 weeks. It was a massive undertaking, and that wasn't fair to the movie. I would redo the entire third act if I could, but the studio literally took the movie away from us. It was terrible. My visual effects supervisor had a nervous breakdown.
That's my favorite.
So I had to be in charge of that. I called James Cameron and asked, what do you do when you're doing all the effects yourself? But the movie did fine. And then he later walked it back and said, the journalist quoted me out of context. I love Armageddon.
Yeah, he was probably drunk when he talked to the journalist.
Scientific accuracy. In an interview with Entertainment Weekly, Michael Bay admitted that the film's central premise that NASA could actually do something in a situation like this was indeed unrealistic. However, the largest potentially known hazardous asteroid, which is only 7 kilometers in diameter, additionally, near the end of the credits, there is a disclaimer saying the National Aeronautics and Space Administration's cooperation and assistance does not reflect an endorsement of the contents of the film or the treatment of the characters depicted therein. So a mathematical analysis of the situation found that Bruce Willis's approach, for it to be effective, he would need to be in possession of an H-bomb a billion times stronger than the Soviet Union's Big Ivan, which is the biggest ever detonated on Earth. So they needed a bigger bomb if this was to be realistic.
And I would have to think, too, that if you did that and the H-bomb was as powerful as it would need to be, that the asteroid might miss Earth, but there would certainly be some effect on Earth from an H-bomb of that significance exploding in space.
Yes.
Yep. Like, right, you wouldn't, boys, be like, hey, yeah, it's Wednesday. We're all fine.
So now we get to the definitive bad guy rankings. And I think this might be our first inanimate object on the bad guy rankings. The asteroid from Armageddon is the bad guy in this movie.
I was rooting for him by the end.
Were you really? You just wanted the whole world to be wiped out.
Yeah, why not?
All right.
It's not. I mean, come on. Paris gone. Shanghai gone. New York gone.
Lambeau Field gone. Hans Gruber from Die Hard is number one on our list so far of all the movies we've reviewed. Michael Myers from Halloween, Cyrus the Virus from Con Air, Brad Wesley from Roadhouse, and Cobra Kai from Karate Kid are in the top five. At the bottom of the list, the worst ones that we have reviewed so far, the incompetent Russian military from Rambo 3, the muggers from Death Wish, the French drug lord from Bad Boys, Gans and Billy Bear from 48 Hours, and Cullen the ponytailed creepo from Kindergarten Cop in the bottom five.
God, he was terrible.
I'm going to make a case for the asteroid to not be in the bottom five.
Oh.
I feel like the asteroid was a better actor than the guy who played Cullen in Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, the asteroid was far superior. So out of principle alone,
okay, fine.
I have to put
also,
it above
it did Cullen. Wipe out Paris, Southeast Asia, and a good chunk of Manhattan.
Yes. It did some damage.
And nobody really questioned it until it wiped out Paris.
And that's pretty iconic if you wiped out literally three pretty big chunks of the world.
So where would it rank? Where would the asteroid fall?
I think out of principle, just because of how bad that actor was in Kindergarten Cop, the asteroid's got to be above Cullen from Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, I'm fine with yeah, absolutely.
And who's above Cullen?
Parrot from Tango and Cash or Perrette from Tango and Cash.
He was pretty easy.
Sloan from Wanted. I mean, that's Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can put the asteroid above Morgan
fine.
Freeman.
I'm fine that's with fine. Where you're putting
yep, that's
the
good.
Asteroid.
That's good. I was just curious.
Okay, so the asteroid avoids the bottom five in our...
God, that guy could not act.
...rankings here. It was pretty bad. All right, now we get to our overall ranking system here. So Die Hard and Halloween are the only perfect 10 scores that we have given out.
Way to go, Bruce.
Taken, John Wick, Commando, Beverly Hills Cop, Fast and the Furious, The Expendables, Top Gun, and Roadhouse round out the top 10 for us. The worst movies we have reviewed in order from the bottom up are Kindergarten Cop, Shoot 'Em Up, Bloodsport, Mad Max 2, Wanted, Rambo, Tango and Cash, and Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom. Those are all below a 5 for us. So we'll start with Judd Zolgad, 1 through 10. What are you giving Armageddon for a score here?
The silliness of it actually helps it. The length hurts it. There was way too much. I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay. Oh, wow. I thought you'd have it lower. The way you talked about it, I thought you'd have
it was
just like
way
a 3
too
or a 4.
It was way too long, but the star power was really high.
That's good to know.
The star power, I don't think that there was one actor that I couldn't stand.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Buscemi's unbelievable. Yeah. Bruce is great. Bruce is Bruce. Liv Tyler. Nobody in the 90s pouted like her. Every film that she was in back then.
You're preaching to the choir here.
With those big lips.
Yes.
No one could pout like Liv could pout.
She also put the NASA head guy in an arm bar
at
one
awesome.
Point, which I feel like was a little bit unrealistic. In a moment
it.
Of crisis, like, who's this rando?
That you're unrealistic.
Now you've gone too far.
This would never happen.
It was fine.
All right, Dex. 6 for Judd. I'm going to give it a 7. I think, I don't know, it did drag a little bit. Like, the last hour is just great action and everything, but I don't know that we needed, like, 90 minutes to set up the last hour.
No, you're right. You did
so not. So it just, like, it dragged a little bit, and I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah, I remember halfway, like, because I pause the movie for timestamps for audio clips and stuff, and I remember once when they finally got in the air, I'm like, man, how much left of this movie? And it was exactly halfway through, and I'm like, oh, my God, we're halfway through.
I told you.
I give this a solid 7. I give it a solid 7, too. I think it has ridiculous over-the-top action. The special effects are absurd. The crew is awesome. Liv Tyler's a babe, so it's a 7 for me. It's a total 7.
And that makes it a 6.7 composite rating for us, which puts it in a tie with Out for Justice, just behind True Lies, Speed, and Karate Kid, and ahead of Con Air, The Rock, and Death Wish.
I think that's very fair.
So kind of right in the middle for us.
By the way, remember I told you off mic, I thought everyone died? I thought that was a movie. That was Deep Impact. Deep Impact, which is pretty much the same film.
Spoiler alert.
Just
and
everyone
they all
dies. Everyone dies. That's fine. It's fine.
So you got that confused.
I was convinced till everyone was throughout the entire film. I thought everyone dies in this movie.
Here's a storyline that could have been eliminated easily. Like easily. The guy who has a son who doesn't know who his daddy is. And then he goes and sees the mom and the son says, Mommy, who's that? And she goes, a salesman. And then she sees him walking to the shuttle and says, actually, that's your dad. And then they come back and they're on the tarmac.
Yeah, and they're making out.
Like, I don't need them.
That's fine.
Like, I don't need any of that. I don't care. I don't care about the kid. And I sure don't care about. And like that character, just kill him.
Yeah. Boys, what are we doing next week here? So we got to put some nominations up for next week's, and then we'll put it up for vote. I'm going to go through, there's a bunch of listener submissions here. I'm going to put Once Upon a Time in Mexico up from listener Rick.
Okay, like how long is that?
For listeners.
I think it's long.
I've got to look at
it. Is it long?
I think it's long.
We need to
it's
look
Tarantino, at it. It's Tarantino, right? I mean.
Is it Tarantino? I've never seen it. It's a listener submission.
Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
It's Robert Rodriguez, excuse me.
Okay, it's 2003.
And the runtime is 1 hour 42, actually.
Okay. That's fine. That'll be, yeah, I'm good with that.
I'll go?
Yeah.
John Wick 2.
Nice.
We've done John Wick. I want to do John Wick 2.
I like John Wick a lot, so.
Okay.
Terminator.
Yep. All right.
Original Terminator.
Original, yeah, yes, very much the original Terminator.
Original Terminator.
I'm going Kickboxer.
Sarah Connor.
Kickboxer.
Kickboxer.
All right.
So Terminator, Kickboxer, John Wick 2, and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Jean-Claude Van Damme as a kickboxer.
Yeah. I'm into it.
All you need to know.
Are we going back possibly to...
It's very similar to Bloodsport. Very similar to Bloodsport.
Which did not fare well on the show. Back when.
All right, that's a wrap on Action Movie Rewind.
It is. It looks the exact same, too.
It's amazing.
I've been drilling holes in the earth for 30 years, and I have never, never missed a depth that I have aimed for. And by God, I am not going to miss this one. I will make 800 feet.
42 seconds.
But I can't do it alone, Colonel. I need your help. You swear on your daughter's life, on my family's, that you can hit that mark.
I will make 800 feet. I swear to God I will.
And let's turn this bomb off.
It's hard if you don't believe in it. And I believe in it. Gerson believes in it. So that's why, you know, you focus on, and hey, I get it. Losses, you know, when they do stack up, it hurts. It hurts. We're all competitors here.
Patrick Roycey, Ryan Saunders, and Gerson still believing in the process. How are you feeling last night when they were down by 30 points in the third quarter to the Portland Trailblazers? I get the cats out, but my God.
I wasn't feeling like making sure I can find FSN on a new streaming service, I'll tell you that.
Exactly.
They're not going to be my inspiration. It's going to take something else. They obviously can't play without the guy and compete. And I like Okogie a lot, but you can't play with Naz Reid as your center for 30 minutes. I mean, he's a loose cannon. And I don't know what else they can do here. I guess I thought they had a chance if they could get Cat to play like he did in the season opener, play a little defense in the fourth quarter, block a shot once in a while, take some attention away from Beasley and Russell so they could throw up threes. But now you just got Russell firing it up. And boy, there's nobody like, from what I can tell, nobody likes garbage time better than Anthony Edwards, huh?
It's great, out? Yeah.
19 shots, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Fire, but this is going to just be another, you know, are we back to 15 wins if this continues and Cat doesn't play for a while?
Well, that seems optimistic.
I was going to say, 15 would be successful at that point.
I don't know. I'm just very stunned by what else happened in the NBA yesterday. Tibbs signed Taj Gibson.
Hey, Tibbs is a hero there, my man. they love Tibbs with the Knickerbockers.
Did you see Tibbs brought back?
Yes.
Taj?
Amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Tibbs sat out basically a season and a half, and he contemplated what he was going to do if he got another job. And his answer was, same damn thing. The other night they won. They played 8 guys. And, you know, the one thing he did change is he didn't listen to Calipari in the first draft he had here and didn't take Jamal Murray. He took Chris Dunn. This time he took that Quickly kid from Kentucky, who's, I guess, pretty good. Who's had to be a Cal guy, right? I mean, he's a Kentucky guy, so and we didn't know that much about him, so it hasn't. But what I have discovered is how the Knicks, by reading the Twitter feed and stuff, how the Knicks have filled that building up for 15 years of utter ineptitude, because the Twitter feed is, I love this Knicks team. They're playing so hard. I'm crying when I watch the games. They're playing so hard. They're 5-3. You know, it's unbelievable. I guess there is that that is Brad Nick's love there, that they just want the smallest little tiny sign of life. This team he's got, by the way, is terrible. Have you looked at the roster? It's unbelievable.
He doesn't care. He plays his guys. The one thing about Tibbs that I will never get is when he got let go by the Bulls, he went on that like year of finding himself and like went and watched Belichick and went and watched Pop and came back and said, I've got these ideas now. The man never changes. Why'd he bother?
Same time, same thing this time. He contemplated life. He lived here, you know, after he got fired till October. He stayed here in his condo because he had a lease and he was probably paying $4,000 a month or something. So he didn't, even though he was getting what, 14 to walk, right? Seven a year.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think he got 14 to walk. He didn't want to, he hung around here and, you know, and paid his rent, I guess. It's unbelievable. He hasn't changed at all. But you know what I love about him, don't you? Never once will you hear him say, forget about me, I love you. He's not going to have family written on the blackboard or anything like that. He's going to coach to win tonight. And if I was a ticket holder in the arena, I'd like that. Instead of saying, okay, we only lost by 22 tonight, we're happy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a super fun marriage to watch because the Knicks have just been such a disaster, and Tibbs tends to come in like a Tasmanian devil and just like burn all the bridges. So he's got about 3 years to do some damage, and then I'm sure he'll be on his way again. We'll see.
Well, actually, his first year here, they were only, what, 32 and 50 or something, right? And that's what he said, okay, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And he went and got Butler and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. You know, if there were fans going to the games, this would really be hurting the Timberwolves crowd to be this rotten right out of the chute.
Yes.
And D'Angelo Russell, give me a break. This guy is he cares about one person on the basketball court. D'Angelo Russell. He's going to be a terrible role model for Anthony Edwards on how to play the game of basketball, in my opinion.
I broached a similar sentiment off the top of the show in that, like, he's being paid to elevate this team and lead this team, and, boy, that ain't happening now, and I don't know if it's going to happen.
He had some good, you know, I told you when I went to that last, I think the last game I saw in person was against Phil, who came in here that had Markelle Fultz last year?
Did Sacramento have him?
Yeah, and they're playing him. And D'Angelo is allegedly guarding him and wouldn't even give him a courtesy wave as he went by, you know? And all of a sudden, Markelle Fultz, one of the great flops in NBA history, just driving to the basket, doing anything he wants to. And I said, you know, the hell with this guy. He's, I mean, he can get hot and shoot and have a good game, but he's a knothead.
Yeah.
So as a basketball player, he's a knothead. That won't cause me to say bring back Wiggy, however.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, last thing for you here in this abbreviated wrap with Royce today. I got some advice for you that we're finding out today. If you ever plan to storm a federal building, wear a mask and leave your work badge in your pocket.
Yes, I told the bride last night that this was my favorite idiot, the guy who kept his work badge on.
Were you surprised?
No mask and a work badge. All right.
Completely predictable.
And it's not a little Hubbard work badge that we used to have that we attached.
No, it's big.
Big, great big one.
Hi, my name is Jerry.
Yeah,
I work at Super Value down the street from here, but I got a break.
They're taking video here. I think I'll stare at the camera. He's like that guy years ago that they had cameras set up for weed growing out in the country. We had him on our show, remember? And he walked up there trying to figure out how to dismantle the camera, and he was like the greatest selfie in the history. that was Gary. But this thing turned out not to be too funny. We got a dead cop and four other dead
people. Yeah, five dead people.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable.
So,
you read about the woman Air Force person who got shot?
Yeah.
She was a little off the deep end.
She
thought it was a satanic cult that had fixed the election. So.
It wasn't, but
not good.
Yeah. So, all right, Pat, we'll talk again next week.
See you, Royce.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Wrapping with Royce, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and also the Royce Unchained podcast with Judd every Monday, scorenorth.com, Apple, and Spotify. If you have suggestions for action movies we should review, send them to us on Twitter at Phil Mackey, at Jay Zolgad.
Preferably not 233.
Judd is not looking for a three-hour extravaganza.
I'm not looking for...
Gone with the Wind was kind of an action movie.
It very much was. Very much was.
Civil War. What do you mean?
I know. I'm not doubting that for one second.
All right. That's a wrap on this show. We will see you guys on Monday.